Welcome back to the show. Let's talk to our friend Mr. Darren Sindon, a market commentator at Admiral Markets. Morning to you, Darren.
Good morning, chaps.
How the devil are you, sir?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Another lovely spring day this morning.
Well, I guess you're a Spurs fan and probably a little bit jealous of your rivals this weekend.
I'll try to be magnanimous and wish them all the best in their endeavours.
You see everything crossed there.
Yeah, especially the fingers.
Okay, we've got six slides. Let's go straight in before we run out of time, as we always do on Tip TV. Headline, a look at UK finances and spending.
Yeah, 16 days to go to the election. Obviously, you know, at the moment, no clear winner and a likelihood of a hung parliament or minority government. So maybe just a chance to have a look at some of the issues and, you know, perhaps give people a bit of clarity.
As you always do.
Well, I try to. Let's see what we can do. So let's just move on to the first slide. OK, so look, it's no secret that unemployment continues to fall. And this is a chart that shows just that. So UK unemployment has fallen dramatically since 2010. So that's a positive for the current government, the Tories and the Liberals in coalition. However, the downside to that, and this will probably be what many people will be thinking about on a personal basis, is that average weekly wages, or you know, wages generally, have not been rising consistently. So this is for avoidance of any doubt, the grey line is unemployment, the dotted line is weekly average wage growth, and you can see that we're still considerably below the peaks there of early 2010. And though wage growth has tried to rally across 2014 as we move through 2015, rather perhaps disappointingly, wage growth has dipped again. That's probably telling you a lot about the state of the labour market, perhaps as well the fact that inflation is falling. But what it says to me is that whilst there are lots that, you know, there's rising employment, maybe the labour side of the employment equation, it's not got any room to flex its muscles at the moment. So that will be weighing on people's minds. But if we move on to the second slide. Okay, but the unemployment picture, as I say, it is generally improving. You can look at the sort of nuts and bolts of it in as much detail or granularity as you want. But this is a slide I think that's very important for the future of the country. And this is the dramatic tail off.
That's a brilliant chart. That makes me so happy.
Well, of course, it's not just jobs for the likes of us who are, you know, coming towards the end of our working lives or, you know, getting ever closer to them. But it's obviously important to create jobs for people who are just starting out. So the two lines here, job vacancies rallying very strongly and youth unemployment falling, still high. And let's not pretend there's not more work to do, but the fact is the trend is down, and you know, with that number of job vacancies available, hopefully we can continue to see improvement on that. And whichever party or parties are in power after May the 7th, that's something that they should all be thinking about working on, you know, ever harder.
And significantly better than some of the European countries.
Well, that is our saving grace. Yeah. I think, you know, David Cameron's been at pains to point out, and Nick Clegg to some extent too. You know, whichever side of the political divide you fall on, you can't deny that that is a very positive looking slide for the UK.
The way you explain that, I feel like a veteran. I really do.
Well, I'm afraid we are. You know, we've got to think about it. You know, we're nearer to retirement age than we are to starting our careers, and you know, the future is all about young people getting to well-paid jobs, ideally, and you know, and as we'll see, you know, earning money to pay taxes to help pay for public spending. We'll look at that a little bit later on.
But people need a reason to get out of bed, don't they?
That's they do, absolutely. It's very important to be motivated, and you can be motivated best of all through a good job that you find fulfilling.
Couldn't agree more. Okay, so let's move on to the next slide.
Okay, so this is the slide that's perhaps trying to give us a bit of a flavour of how households are feeling about the economy in general, and we'll do this through the medium of household savings and consumer spending. So household savings is the solid grey line. Household savings basically dipped, or the rate of savings anyway, has dipped across 2014 and into 2015, whilst at the same time consumer spending has risen. Now, given that prices have been for most things static or actually falling backwards as far as things like food are concerned, mortgage rates obviously haven't changed for 5 years. You could argue that this slide tells us that consumers are feeling somewhat more confident. They don't feel the need perhaps to save as much for a rainy day, and that they are prepared to spend a little bit more. Now, we talked last week about, you know, new car registrations being the best they've been for a long time, and maybe that's a sign of increasing consumer confidence. A cynic might argue, and it's probably best to put the other case as well, that savings rates are falling to fund spending, and actually that's coming out of necessity rather than choice. I think the truth is somewhere in the middle. People probably do feel a bit more confident. They've got used to this idea now of low interest rates, which don't appear to be likely to rise very soon. And they probably feel with that sort of visibility out perhaps a year and a half, 2 years for it, they can spend a bit of money now rather than save dramatically. But again, whoever gets into power will in the new government will want to maintain that degree of consumer confidence and, you know, sustainability in the economy, if you like.
Understood. OK, so let's move on to the next slide.
OK, right, here's the bad news.
Right.
And this is a subject that neither of the main parties really want to talk about or indeed any of the, well, perhaps with the exception of UKIP, any of the sort of challenger parties who would like to spend a bit more. The truth is that public sector borrowing remains firmly in the red, and despite the efforts of George Osborne and all the rhetoric about cutting the deficit, it may well be lower than it was, say, perhaps in 2011. But we're still in the red, quite literally, as you can see, and heading further that way. So borrowing does remain an issue, and it's not just the deficit that's the point in case, though. This is the figure that very, very few people have mentioned in any of the debates or discussions I've seen, and that is the national debt, and the fact, perhaps most alarmingly of all, that it is rising as a percentage of GDP.
So the country's taking on more debt on the balance sheet.
Absolutely, yeah, and it's doing it, and the size of that debt
and the percentage is growing compared to what we're actually producing, yes, is going up.
Yes, absolutely. If you think that GDP is around £1.7 trillion, pounds, national debt is currently about £1.52 trillion, and that if you like, one is the debt is catching up with GDP. GDP is perhaps about £600 billion below its peak pre the crisis. We haven't looked like getting back to there, but the debt level is creeping ever higher, and obviously the less the higher the debt is relative to what you're earning, the harder it becomes to pay it back.
Yep.
Because
the government have got a tricky situation. If they start hiking rates up, okay, they've got to repay this national debt, and the borrowing costs are that much higher.
Right. Well, it's not so much the borrowing costs now, but the borrowing costs in the future, because most of this is in form of gilts, which have got a fixed coupon, and they're already issued. But what it does mean is higher interest rates will make it dearer to refinance some of this debt once it's repaid. Yep. It's a perpetual rolling process. So yes, that is an issue, and rising rates will have will
impact
give
impact on that number.
Yeah, a cause for concern. And so the last slide is the other big elephant in the room, that nobody really wants to talk about in broad terms. The NHS obviously is a subject that nearly everyone in the country will have an opinion on. Well, the truth is, we are spending whatever anyone says, we're spending more and more and more of the money that we earn in the country on the NHS. So this first chart, this is from the Nuffield Trust, an independent health-related charity. Who
I had a foot operation through the Nuffield Trust many moons ago.
They do a lot of good work and do a lot of good statistical work on the state of the NHS. So this first chart shows us UK health spending as a percentage of GDP, which is the blue line, and the red line is as a percentage of public spending as a whole. Everything was rebased to 100 back in 2000, but just look how dramatically the spending on the NHS as a percentage of GDP rises. It's risen effectively 40% since.
It's incredible.
It has dipped off since 2009, but still we're a good sort of 35%, spending more than 35% more than we were in 2000 on health as far as that is concerned, and in terms of the measure for public spending, that's still grown dramatically and grown dramatically since 2007 particularly. Just to give that some kind of context, what do we spend on a per head basis? It's age adjusted, but basically it gives us an average figure. So in 2009 we were spending just over £2,021 per head in England on healthcare. What it might surprise you to know is that we actually spend less in England on healthcare per head than any of the other regional areas in the country. It's interesting.
Is that right?
Yeah, we don't spend enough on ourselves compared to Wales, Scotland and Northern Ireland.
Right.
That figure's dipped now to £1,980.97 of the last knockings.
So basically the National Health Service are paying out £2,000 per adult
per person
in this country.
So here's the question that people need to ask themselves, and politicians and voters. It's great to talk about getting people into jobs. It's great to talk about taking people out of the tax system. But for every person that gets a relatively low-paid job that doesn't pay tax, someone else is having to subsidise a £2,000 per annum charge.
Which is £40 per week.
Yeah, so that money's got to come from somewhere, and that's the kind of frank conversation that we need to have, or people need to think about, perhaps, before they cast their votes ahead of the election.
Well, I've got to say, looking at the slides, OK, I was really quite upbeat on the first few, not so upbeat on the last few, but I think the current government have done quite a good job. Whether you could argue they've been in the right seat at the right time in terms of economic cycles and everything, but I think we'd perhaps be taking a big risk changing it at such a sensitive time.
Quite possibly, and it's, you know, if looking at that, some of the hard questions and really difficult tasks are going to be in the next 5 years rather than the previous five. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think we,
as it always is, though, in
of
politics.
Course, you know, we all need to think long and hard about where we mark our ballot papers and what that means for the country as a whole.
Particularly if it's a rather more difficult coalition than the one we've had for the last 5 years.
Absolutely.
OK, Darren Sinden, market commentator, Admiral Markets, thank you as always. Very, very thought-provoking. Right, let's take a very, very quick break and then we're going to come back to a pre-record I did just before the open. Mr Clem Chambers, the founder of ADVFN. And I've got the headline here, Musings of an Old Market Rogue. I'm sure Clem will love that, sitting in Italy. Straight back after the break. Thank you.